Any questions here before we get started about things that are happening? All right. We are in Acts chapter 10. As I was prepping for this lesson, I mean, some lessons, you know, I go through the prep and it's great, but some make me giddy. And this is really, I guess, a foundation laying study, but even so, it made me giddy. So I don't know why. You may not think so. Acts chapter 10, verse 1. Somebody read it.
At Caesarea, there was a man named Cornelius, a centurion of what was known as the Italian cohort. Devout man.
Nope. Just one. Sorry. Just one. And in fact, I could have stopped you at the second word. At Caesarea. Okay, we are at Caesarea. Caesarea is where? Yes, Israel. Okay. Good. Where is Caesarea situated within Israel? It is on the coast. So go to the coast, find Joppa, go north of Joppa, about 30 miles, 35 miles, maybe close to 40 miles. And there you find Caesarea. Caesarea is really an amazing city. They're on the Mediterranean. If you look at the coastline, there are no natural kind of ports. What would a natural port be? Boston would have been a natural port. You've got Cape Cod coming out and forming that big barrier, essentially, to the Atlantic Ocean, giving nice, tranquil waters there in Boston Harbor. Okay. But there's nothing there on the Mediterranean. And, in fact, it was really quite shallow. So there was nothing to prevent the waves and to batter the ships and no place really to moor or anchor until Herod the Great. Herod the Great he was an extraordinary architect. He was an extraordinary engineer. And he engineered a port in Caesarea. I mean, there are huge underwater blocks. How'd they get them out there? I don't know. That essentially he set up to create a port much like, you know, Cape Cod. You know, this big arcing, like marble blocks to essentially calm the waters and to provide ships a place to anchor. Phenomenal. I mean, they're still there today. I mean, you can...
above the water? Or just
you know, I don't know if at the time it extended up above the water. Currently, it's all underwater. Caesarea was a beautiful town. I've been there. There are archaeological digs of a hippodrome, okay, big racetrack, big amphitheater also, all created by Herod the Great. Was one of the cities that he invested a lot into. Well, it would come as no surprise that the Romans would go, hey, this is a great place for us to headquarter, and they did. So it was the Roman capital of that region. We read about Pontius Pilate being in Jerusalem. That was unnatural. Pontius Pilate was in Jerusalem only because it was Passover. Typically, you would have found Pontius Pilate down in Caesarea. Okay, that's where the Roman governor stayed. As we go later into Acts, that is where we are going to find Felix and Festus, the Roman governors, later on in Acts. So it would come as no surprise to us then, if that is the headquarters of the Roman government, that there would be a sizable Roman garrison there of Roman soldiers. Okay? Which brings us to this one, Cornelius, who was a centurion. What was a centurion? Okay, how did you know it was 100?
Century.
Century, okay? You know, prefixes and suffixes, okay? Century, 100. Centurion was typically the leader of 100. You know, most of you are very familiar with the New Testament. Centurions within the New Testament, how are they portrayed?
Very authoritative.
Okay, highly respected, authoritative. Okay, how else are they portrayed? What?
The bad guys.
Actually not. No. You know, and you would think so. You would think Romans, Romans, blah. But no, just about every time you see a centurion, he is a man who's quite noble and really is not in conflict with Israel. The centurion who had a sick servant, thank you, from Galilee, from Capernaum, who sent his servants to Jesus to say, hey, could you come and heal, or could you heal my servant? And Jesus says, I'll go with you. And they say, no, you don't. We understand you're Jew. It's a Gentile Roman. You don't have to come. We know that you can simply say the word and he'll be healed. And Jesus was like, pow! I've not seen such faith in all of Israel. That was a Roman centurion who believed in Jesus. We have the centurion at the cross who says, surely this was the Son of God. Okay, again, a centurion. And so here we have a centurion whose name is Cornelius. He was of the Italian cohort. Okay, I didn't know this. I had to look it up. Above the centurion was the cohort. Centurion looked over 100. The cohort was 300 to 600 Roman soldiers. Okay? And above the cohort was the legion, which was 3,000 to 6,000 Roman soldiers. Okay? So the cohort, he was a member of the Italian cohort, so there were probably three to six centurions within that cohort. I didn't know this either, and so this is an interesting factoid. Apparently, the Italian cohort, they got this from an inscription in Austria they found, and they believe that the Italian cohort specifically was drawn from the indigenous population. The soldiers of the Italian cohort was drawn from the indigenous population, was not a usual part of the legion. It was almost like a separate body for specific services. And because it was drawn from the indigenous population, the men were drawn from the indigenous population, they would have a better relationship with the surrounding people. Okay, which, as we go on, you go, well, that would seem to make sense here. But then my question gets raised, if they're drawn from the indigenous population, why are they called the Italian cohort? I don't know. So, that's stuff we don't know. But it might explain, if Cornelius, no kidding, was from this region, why his family was there with him. Especially in the size that it was, because we're going to see that his household there was obviously sizable.
So, just a second. So you're saying that they went into Caesarea.
The Romans?
So the Italian cohort is made up of Jews?
Not saying Jews necessarily.
Okay. But you're in Israel.
You're in northern Israel, and you're going to have the Palestinians around there as well, people left over from the Babylonian captivity that the Babylonians brought in and dispersed around. So you're going to find people who are not necessarily opposed to the Romans.
Okay, but there could have been Jews.
Could have been. Could have been. His name, Cornelius, is not a Jewish name. Okay. So maybe he was a Greek living in that area prior to this time. Verse 2. Jacob, would you read verse 2, please?
A devout man, who feared God with all his household, gave alms generously to the people and prayed continually to God.
Okay. So here we have a centurion, a Roman centurion. Okay, is he himself Roman? Don't know, probably not. But he was devout. Feared God with all his household. So we see that he is obviously, or implied there, leading his household in this reverence for God. He, like Dorcas, did alms deeds, as the King James said of Dorcas last week. He gave alms there. Again, this is obvious, but it's important to think about. Who did he give alms to? The poor. Could it have been Jews? Yes. Could it have been, anyone. Anyone who is in need. So here is this guy. I mean, he's got authority. With power comes the temptation to abuse that power. And it doesn't sound like he is that kind of guy. Rather, I will help out. In fact, the centurion who sent his servants to Jesus in Capernaum, he was known for actually building the synagogue. I mean, he had a hand in building the synagogue. So, not all were dirtbags there. Gave alms generously to the people, and he prayed continually before God. Okay. So, this guy sounds, I mean, like he sounds like a believer. You go, you say he's a believer, but where did he get his information?
Someone told him.
Well, just like the word traveled up to.
Oh, wait. An angel told disciples.
Well, we're going to, at this point, we're going to see he doesn't know this Jesus dude.
Yeah.
He doesn't know this Jesus dude. So.
He knows about him.
No. Yes. From where?
Old Testament.
It doesn't say. Okay, it doesn't say, so we're left to surmise. Okay?
How can you definitively say that you didn't know about Jesus?
We'll see. As we go into this, because, well, the whole, Peter's going to explain Christ to him. Okay, so there we will see essentially that there's an ignorance about what. If he knew of him, he didn't understand the implications. He may have heard of this priesty rabbi guy. Yeah, it was crucified and there was a big hullabaloo about him or some such thing. But none of the details. So he may have learned from the law and the prophets. I mean, if he's from that area, he would probably have some awareness of Jews and Judaism. How else can people learn about God? Okay, what is the general revelation? Is that a book in the Bible? Yeah, the creation. Does the creation declare the handiworks of God?
Yes.
Does it testify to the one true God? Yes, but not in detail. You know, Paul tells us that men are without excuse on the fact of the general revelation alone. Okay. Here's something. The battle that man has between his sinful flesh and his conscience. The battle that man has between his sinful flesh and his conscience. Something's not right. Something's not right. And if I feel so not right, there has to be a right. There has to be a right, which points me to someone who can make it right. I mean, to hold a baby in your arms, you go, how can this... this is a miracle. This is a miracle. You know, there's... within false religions, I would contend that there are things to learn about God that are just twisted enough to distort and hook folks. But within that false religion, if somebody is to go, wait a minute, okay, if there is this God, and you know there are consequences to following Him, you know, perhaps even within the false religion, there can be glimpses of the one true God, distorted, but to perhaps stir the soul.
You know, that makes me think of when Paul went and talked to the people of Rome, and he said, you see this statue over here to the unknown God.
Yes.
The statue of the unknown God amongst all these other
yes.
idols.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, beautiful. Excellent. Excellent. Okay, so here is this guy who he's seeking, at the very least, he wants to know truly this God. I mean, that is the implication we get from the first two verses here. 3 and 4. Corbin, would you read 3 and 4, please?
About the ninth hour of the day, he clearly saw in a vision an angel of God who had just come in and said to him, Cornelius! And fixing his gaze on him and being much alarmed, he said, what is it, Lord? And he said to him, your prayers and alms have ascended as a memorial before God.
Okay. Time of the day.
3 o'clock.
3 o'clock. Good. Okay. Try and remember, you know, try and, okay, let's put this into something we understand, the ninth hour.
Yeah, well.
Again, generally, John gets a little goofy. John makes it tough, but generally, within the Gospels and Luke here and in the ancient writings, Iliad, Odyssey, those kinds of things, when they say the ninth hour, they mean from sunrise. Sunrise being 6 a.m.-ish there. So we go ninth hour, that would be 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Remember, back in at the very end of verse 2, we see that Cornelius was a prayerful man. Is he in prayer at this time? It doesn't say. Quite possibly. And he has a vision of an angel. Okay, how is that vision described?
It was very clear.
That's important. That is so very important. Think of your dreams. You know, some of us dream more vividly than others, okay? Some can't even remember their dreams. But even those of us who dream pretty vividly, it's still... Yeah, okay, it's... No, this was clear. This was as clear as you and I speaking together. Like, boom, whoa, holy cow, there's a vision of an angel. What is an angel? What is an angel?
Messenger.
Good. That's good. That's good to know. The word angel means messenger. It was a messenger. He had a clear vision of a messenger. Supernatural there. An angel of God. So there's no doubt in his mind who this guy is. This isn't just the local tax collector coming by. This is clearly an emissary of the living God. No doubt in his mind. Called him by name. Okay. So here is, imagine your home in your living room. Maybe the kids are back in their bedrooms. Quiet. Miracle. Yes, possible. And all of a sudden there's a guy in your living room. And you go, this is like no guy I've ever seen before. And he calls you by your first name.
You call him Lord.
Yeah, I mean, like, whoa. And so verse 4 comes as no surprise to us. It should come as no surprise that Cornelius' eyes got like saucers. And he was terrified. And what do you say if somebody calls you by name? Yes. Whatever, you know. I'm not even going to pull. I'm not even going to draw on you here.
Would it be more like you would say, yes, sir? And then the sir would be like the Lord?
That's it, yeah. Yeah. Like, let me get down on a knee here. What is it, Lord? He said to him. Your prayers and your alms have ascended as a memorial before God. Okay, think about that. Does God forget anything? So why does he need a memorial?
For remembrance, more of like a recognition.
Do I know what my kids look like?
I hope so.
Mm-hmm. Why do I need pictures?
Can you draw?
Because they're not with you all the time, and you want to remember things from the past.
Yeah. You know, and God, again, we go, God knows us all perfectly, intimately, all the time. He never needs to be reminded. But here is this memorial before God now of Cornelius's prayers and his givings. I think, as I read this, I thought back to Job, where, you know, Satan comes before God. And God's like, hey, have you seen my servant Job? And I heard somebody describe it once, like pulling out his wallet and going, fuck. You know, and, you know, pointing out a picture. Have you seen my servant Job? You know, that God just is so well pleased. Cornelius ever have any thought about, I mean, he gave people because he had and they needed. He prayed. Why? Because he loved this God that he didn't know perfectly yet. And God, it is now a memorial. They have ascended as a memorial before God. Oh, touched my heart. So, you know, it's like, okay, it's cool. You're on good standing. Not here to smite you. Now, here's your command. Send. This command is great. Okay. Notice he doesn't say go. He says send men. Why? Yes, you know, it's almost like the angel is recognizing his position. You know, and he could he have said, hey, dude, you know, get off your high horse. Well, he wasn't on a high horse. And so the angel respected his position and said, okay, go. You know, send men to Joppa. And look at the specificity, how specific this command is. This is beautiful. Send men to Joppa and bring one, Simon, who is called Peter. Not just Simon, because there are, and we're going to see, there are other Simons in town. In fact, we got that way back in verse 43 of chapter 9. We kind of go, why in the world are we, why do we care that he's staying with Simon a tanner in Joppa? So find in Joppa a dude who's called Simon, but he's also called Peter. Okay. Well, where am I going to find that? Well, he's lodging with one Simon, a tanner. Oh, okay. Well, that narrows things down. Oh, by the way, in his house is by the sea. So all of these details these guys got as they are sent out from Caesarea. When the angel who spoke to him departed, he called two of his servants and a devout soldier from among those who attended him. And having related everything to them, he sent them to Joppa. How did he know the soldier was a devout soldier?
Soldier's life.
Are we thinking that the soldier is devout to Cornelius or devout to the Lord?
Considering it's the same word that is used of Cornelius, I believe he is a believer as well. I'm sorry? Well, how do you know?
How good leaders know their men.
Okay, good. Okay, so what it then must be true of the soldier? Okay, think about this in your daily life.
His character.
Okay?
Trust him.
This has to be a man. You would like to think he's a man of character. Why? Because a believer should be a man of character. Can you hide your faith? Yes, especially if it's not much of a faith. You know, hide it under a bushel, no, I'm going to let it shine, you know. Okay? We can do this. Why would we do this?
Because it's not going to take fear.
Of?
What others think of you, persecution,
mm-hmm.
ridicule.
Do you really believe that? Are you kidding me? This is the 21st century. You know, get with it. You're gonna cast your vote in such a way to please your God? Do you not understand what that's gonna do to the election? Man. My God's a whole lot bigger than the election. He is going to have his way with our election, regardless of me. So this thing about the devout soldier, the thing that impressed me is he was known. His love for the Lord was palpable. It was seen. You could see it in his life. If he were going to be convicted of being a Christian, he would be hung because there was evidence of it. So, if you were to go around the 60 men in my office, would they know I'm a believer or not?
They should.
Yes. You know, the people where you work, the people that you encountered in your goings and comings at CVS. You know, are you kind? Are you just? Are you the people that you meet on the highway? Now that you know that kind of an encounter, they may not know, but they know you're a good person at the very least. But the people we rub shoulders with frequency should come to know that we are believers in the living God.
When they come to round up the Christians, if they're not knocking at your door, why not?
Wow. Ow. Ow. All right. That's so true. So, having related everything to them, he sent them to Joppa. Okay, it is how far? 40 miles. It's just shy of 40 miles. What time of day was this? 3 in the afternoon. How are they getting to Joppa? Well, they're walking. We could get in a car and be there in an hour. They are not going to make it. So they start walking. It's going to get dark. They're going to keep walking? Maybe. You know, as Romans, you've been given a command, you go. Probably they're going to spend the night at some place along the way. They may just be sleeping on the beach. Okay, Joppa also, if you look at the map, is on the coast. So Caesarea is on the coast, Joppa's on the coast there, walking down the coast. Okay, it's not like the coast of California where you got big old cliffs and such and the like. It's pretty mellow coastline there on the Eastern Med, Western Med, different, but there in the Eastern Med. So these three were traveling. Verse 9, they're not there yet. The next day as they were on their journey and approaching the city, Peter, who we left there in Joppa, went up on the housetop at about the 6th hour to pray. So he's up at about noon. Okay. All right. Now imagine this. Okay. Where's Simon's house? It's on the coast. Okay. You are in southern Israel on the coast. Or the southern portion of the Eastern Med, on the coast, and you want to find a place to pray. Go up on the roof. You imagine how beautiful that is up there? Think San Diego. Okay, you are in San Diego, 75 degrees, gorgeous, and you are up on the roof to pray. Huh?
Year round.
It's very temperate down there. Yes.
Have a breeze coming off.
Okay, and he went up there. Peter went up there to pray. Second time already in this passage we have seen two men who are given to pray. He got hungry. Okay, so he may be up there for a while. He became hungry and wanted something to eat. But while they were preparing it, he fell into a trance. Okay? Yeah. The word, interesting word. Okay, the word for trance is ecstasy.
Ecstasy.
Yes. It's from which we get ecstasy. Ek, whenever you hear the prefix ek in Greek, it means out. Stasis. What is stasis? What? What? No? Stationary. Stasis. You know, if you are in stasis in the hospital, you're good. Everything is steady. The word in Greek actually means stand. You're not moving. Okay, ecstasis is out of, essentially out of the normal. Okay? It is used for amazement, and it is used for somehow out of the normal mind thought process. Okay? Interesting word. How does it bear in? Probably not much. Other than this was... a vision?
But different than the centurion.
Yes, there's something different here that Peter's experiencing. Now he's really hungry. Okay? When you have a strong desire for something, does your mind always work clearly? No. We're talking to somebody about freezing to death, where you're cold, and all of a sudden you feel warm. Okay, you are out of your mind. You are really close to death here because you are not thinking clearly anymore. And so people might accuse Peter of, he was just so hungry, that's why this weird vision comes. He's not that hungry. Okay. I don't believe he's been fasting for 40 days here, that kind of thing. So I'm not going to accuse him of that.
No, I think so. I mean, the Tanner was a good host for that one.
Yeah, you'd like to think so. But we'll see that. We'll actually see that later, because he's got three more miles to feed here in just a bit. Okay, so Peter sees the heavens opened and something like a great sheet descending, being let down by its four corners upon the earth. You know, I'm not gonna surmise. But the thing that is important to note is, where is it coming from? Okay, in Peter's trance, it is coming from heaven. Therefore, it is coming from God. It is coming from God. Okay, so this is coming down, and he can't really see. You imagine a sheet being gathered up by all four corners. You go, okay, there's something in the sheet, and the sheet opens up, and it's critters. In it were all kinds of animals, reptiles, and birds of the air. Animals, okay, not a big deal. Birds of the air, not a big deal. Reptiles. And there came a voice to him, notice a voice, rise, Peter, kill and eat. Okay, and we, in our 21st century American mind, are going, anybody had reptile of any kind? Alligator nuggets that taste like chicken, rattlesnake that tastes like chicken, cook up a reptile, tastes like chicken.
It's a little tough.
Okay.
Chewy.
Yeah, that would not bother me as much as some stuff. So we go, okay, cool, great, wonderful. Peter's a Jew, though. So Peter goes, by no means, Lord. Okay, I'm not falling for that. And he's like looking, going, where's the candy camera kind of thing. Yeah, I'm hungry, but I'm not that hungry. Peter knows these are at least the reptiles are unclean. Flip back to Leviticus chapter 11. You can hold your place there. Numbers. That's not the right chapter. Leviticus 11. Clean and unclean animals all the way through, and you can read all the ones that are clean and other ones that are unclean. I'm going to have you just jump to 29 here. And these are unclean to you among the swarming things that swarm on the ground, the mole rat, the mouse, the great lizard of any kind, the gecko, the monitor lizard, the sand lizard, and the chameleon. These are unclean to you among all that swarm. Whoever touches them when they are dead shall be unclean until evening. And anything on which any of them falls when they are dead shall be unclean, whether it is, and he goes on from there. The Jews took it, and you will see elsewhere in the law that if something unclean came in contact with something that was clean, it became unclean. So here all these critters are in this sheet together, and Peter goes, no thanks. No, not going to. You've just unloaded a big old satchel of unclean animals to me. I'll wait. I'll hold my appetite. Thank you. I'm a devout, I am a Jew. Okay, he still understands his heritage. Okay, and I have never eaten anything that is common or unclean. And the voice came to him a second time and said, what God has made clean, do not call common. Essentially, I am telling you, I'm not tricking you, I am telling you to kill and eat. You have my blessing of all of these things to kill and eat. This happened three times, and the thing was taken up at once to heaven. Now I'm going to have you jump to a spot. Flip back to Mark chapter 7. Who wrote Mark? Good, excellent. You guys are good. Make a good straight man.
I thought maybe that was a trick question.
No. It's like okay. But where did Mark get his information from?
Peter.
In Mark chapter 7, verse 18, Jesus says, then are you also without understanding? Do you not see that whatever goes into a person from outside cannot defile him, since it enters not his heart but his stomach and is expelled? Thus he declared all foods clean. So as Peter goes on in his life, even after this event, and he takes these two events and he looks back, he even sees way back when he was walking with Jesus that even then Jesus declared all foods clean, and he didn't even have to go through this on the rooftop. When he said, kill and eat, he could have said, fine. You betcha. Now Peter's inwardly perplexed about this whole thing. Verse 17 of chapter 10. What in the world is going on? I have no clue. Well, by this time the men arrive, so it's probably now 2 in the afternoon. And the men show up. Make inquiry about Simon. They're out at the gate. They called to ask if whether Simon, who was called Peter, was lodging there. While Peter was pondering the vision, the Spirit. We now see who the voice is. The voice is the Holy Spirit, said to him, behold, three men are looking for you. Rise and go down and accompany them without hesitation. For the men, for I have sent them. Peter went down to the men, said, I am the one you are looking for. What is the reason you are coming? And they said, Cornelius, a centurion, an upright and God-fearing man, who is well spoken of by the whole Jewish nation, was directed by a holy angel to send for you to come to his house and to hear what you have to say. Notice it doesn't even say anything about Jesus. They just know he's got something to say, and we want to hear it. So he invited them in to be his guests. The Spirit told Peter to go without hesitation. He invites them in to be his guests. Did Peter disobey the Spirit?
I would think that if he said, are you going to say, no, I don't want to. If I said, he welcomed them in.
Very good.
The very next day, it's Peter went.
Very good. So the hesitation, I'm thinking, is not a chronological hesitation. It is more a, these are Gentiles, and I'm suspicious hesitation. Okay, good. I mean, it is proper. These men have been traveling all day. They've come from Caesarea. That is plain. Holy cow, that's 40 miles. Guess what? They're probably hungry, tired, thirsty. Come in. Let me show you hospitality. And so they did, and they left the next day. All right. So we're going to stop there, and we'll look at the rest of the story. So we're kind of just laying the groundwork. Some takeaways from this that I took. God is working in the hearts and minds of people that as yet do not know him perfectly. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we call him low-hanging fruit. I mean, Cornelius is ripe for salvation. He is ripe to know the living God perfectly in Christ. And again, through the general revelation, through the special revelation, don't know, through perhaps even false religions, he's gotten glimpses of the living God, and he really, truly wants to know him. So God is working in the hearts and minds of people that we would think maybe he's not. A Roman centurion? Second, God will use his children to help those people know the one that they seek.
What I get out of that is angels do not give the gospel.
Interesting.
Men relay the gospel. So when somebody tells me, hey, you know, the leader of my congregation or church or founding religion was, you know, talked to an angel and an angel told him this, I'm kind of like, yeah.
Here's the next thing. It's okay to be inwardly perplexed about what God is doing. I mean, Peter's like, he's sitting up on the roof going, not tracking. Not. And even when the guys show up, Peter doesn't know why they're there. He was just told to go with them. He doesn't even know. And they say, hey, we heard you were here and we want you to come and tell us what you know. How to fish? No, probably not. So it's okay. It's okay to be, and even as yet, the vision doesn't make sense to Peter, but it will. That whole vision is going to fall into perfect place here in just a little bit. So it's okay for us as saints to be perhaps confused. Now, despite our confusion on these peripheral matters, we must remain obedient to that which God has made eminently clear to us. Peter was told to go. Okay, go. I don't know why, but I'm going. We have his word to which is so much of it is so very clear. How am I going to apply that to this election? Okay, but there's plenty I know that is absolutely clear and I have to be obedient to those things. Got to stay obedient to that which God has made clear. The last thing, and I'm sorry, I'm rushing through the takeaways here. Let's never forget the profound role that prayer plays in the lives of the New Testament saints. Cornelius was a devout man who continued steadfastly in prayer. Peter, up on the roof, praying. Man, I cannot encourage you enough to set aside special time every day to be with your King, to be with your Abba, to be with the Savior, to fellowship with him in the Word through the Holy Spirit. I ran over, I'm sorry. Any kids can come down. Anybody else? Any other things impress you?